spoštovane poslušalke in poslušalci, dober večer ponovno iz Izolske kavarne. Spet javljamo z vestmi iz festivala Kino Otok. Gneča je v kavarni po kosilu že nekako gostila, sonce se počasi že šibi, ne? Še vedno je kar precej prijetno. Ampak festival pa se pravzaprav šele pripravlja na svoje današnje vrhunce. Ob 21. bo tradicionalna projekcija na Largo pri Špini, tudi iz sklopa Najdene podobe. Med obiskovalci je ta lokacija sicer bolj znana po bifeju pri Kralju, kjer se radi zadržujemo. Prav tako ob 21. pa bo tudi projekcija filma 78 dni. Intervju z režiserko Emilijo Gašič smo imeli v prvem javljanju ob enih, ki mu boste, če mu že ne morete kmalu, lahko prisluhnili tudi na naši spletni strani. 15 minut prej, 15 do 9. se pa začne, tako kot pravzaprav vsak večer, tretja edicija letošnjega videa na plaži, programa kratkih filmov na Špici, ki je tudi eden od prepoznavnih in celo bi lahko rekli zaščitnih znakov Kina Otok. Prav s tem bomo začeli tudi tokratno javljanje. Pridružila sta se mi namreč ena od selektoric programa tega videa na plaži, Teja Mikolič, in pa Juž Premrov, avtor enega od kratkih filmov, ki smo ga lahko videli včeraj. Po tem kratkem pogovoru se nam bo pa pridružil še ameriški eksperimentalni filmar Bill Morrison. Njegovi kratki filmi bodo v sekciji Najdena podoba na sporedu jutri ob 6. Z njim se bo pa pogovarjala Vanja Gajič. Zdaj pa Teja pa Juž, lepo pozdravljena tukaj v zelo mirni kavarni Odeon.
Živjo.
Živjo.
Najprej jo bom vprašal, tako kot se spodobi, kakšni so občutki?
Občutki so fenomenalni. Sonce je, ljudje se imajo fajn, lušno, zelo fajn festival.
Res je, se pridružujemo samo povedanemu. Dobri občutki.
Dobro, slišali ste iz najbolj zaupanja vrednih virov. Zdaj pa bi začel mogoče kar pri tebi, Teja, kot selektorici programa, o katerem bomo zdajle malo razpredali. Kakšno vlogo se ti zdi, da imajo te kratki filmi, pa ta video na plaži, ki je pač tudi na taki eminentni lokaciji, tam na Špici pod Borovci, pač znotraj festivala Kino Otok?
Ja, v bistvu se mi zdi, da ta program kratkih filmov je zelo povabi tudi zunanje obiskovalce, ki ni nujno, da se udeležijo kakih drugih filmskih projekcij, pa so vseeno mogoče ravno na plaži, ali pa jih zanima neka projekcija na plaži, njim je to recimo neka dobra pozitivna izkušnja. Se pravi, v bistvu je bolj tako odprtega tipa in zato je tudi zelo lušno obiskano. Hkrati pa se predstavi tudi zelo velik nabor kratkih filmov, ne samo slovenske, ampak tudi tuje produkcije. Ja, to.
Juž, kaj se v tebi zdi o tem segmentu programa, mogoče tudi kot avtorju, kakšen imaš občutek, ko gledaš svoj film pod tistimi borovci, ali pa kot obiskovalcu, kako vidiš funkcijo tega segmenta programa na festivalu?
Ja, zame jaz moram reči, da v bistvu je video na plaži kar nekako enačem to s Kino Otokom kot festivalom, ker v bistvu že vsa leta, ko hodim sem, pa tudi, ko so moji filmi tukaj, sem bil vedno pač povezan s tem video na plaži segmentom, ostalih stvari se ne udeležujem toliko veliko kukor tega, to pa vedno grem vsakič, ker je pač ambijent je toliko prijeten, selekcija je vedno ful zanimiva, gre za eno tako zelo unikatno mešanco tujih stvari, naših stvari, nekih bolj večjih odmevnih stvari z nekimi zelo malimi stvarmi, ki drugače ne bi dobile priložnosti in tudi jaz kot ustvarjalec se mi zdi, da mi je video na plaži ponudil v bistvu kot eno tako zelo dobro odskočno desko, ker pred leti ko je bilo to še mal manjše, smo tudi mi v bistvu z nekimi zelo diletantskimi filmi prišli sem in prišli noter in nam je to malo odprlo stvari, tako da je pač same dobre stvari imam zapovedati to video na plaži, no res ena boljših stvari pri nas.
Mogoče bi se zdaj tukaj navezal, tega programa je v bistvu res veliko. Vsak večer festivala je, traja, ne vem, eno uro pa pol, tudi več. In kako ste se v bistvu s soselektorico Ann Tassel, ki je danes sicer ni tukaj le z nami, lotili pač oblikovanja tega programa? Kako ste izbrali filme, a ste jim dali kakšno rdečo nit, kaj jih povezuje letos?
Ja, v bistvu Video na plaži je edini program Kino Otoka, ki je na poziv, tako da imamo vsako leto prijavni obrazec, ki ga lahko izpolni režiser ali pa distribucije. In v bistvu je glavno vodilo že od nekdaj, da ob bok nekim svetovno priznanim filmom, ki se pojavljajo po različnih festivalih po svetu, lahko postavimo tudi neke neodvisne slovenske filme, neke filme ustvarjalcev, ki so šele na začetku svoje kreativne poti. Tako da je program najprej se začne tako, da se nabere dovolj teh raznolikih filmov, potem se pa v bistvu vsak dan zgodi neka druga tematika, vsako leto se zbere potem različne filme, ki se nekako povezujejo med sabo in vsak večer potem je nekaj drugega na sporedu, no, tematsko.
Se mogoče k temu še vrnemo, pa bi še tebe, Juž, vprašal o tvojem filmu v bistvu, se pravi Hope Fills Your Heart, ki je v bistvu zelo kratka zadeva, kot nekakšen timelapse, oblaki pa gore so zelo v spredju in pa glasba. Tako da, ne vem, a bi nam povedal, kako si, kaj je ta film, pač, kje je to upanje?
Ta film je v bistvu en del enega procesa, k ga ustvarjam že nekaj časa, no, vzdržujem delo na tem procesu. Dve leti nazaj je bil tudi celovečerni film narejen znotraj tega eksperimentalno-dokumentarnega dela, ki ga nekak vlečem še zdaj naprej. Zdaj naslov je tak, mogoče čist iz njega občutka, do katerega sem jaz prišel, ko sem delal ta film in to glasbo, ki pa še zraven, se pravi, gre v bistvu za nek pogled na stvari popolnoma brez človeka, se pravi, moj cilj je nekak, da gledalci in da tudi jaz v bistvu ob ustvarjanju tega nekak dobim neko veliko širšo sliko sveta, se pravi, tako kot si rekel, ta film je v bistvu neka kratka zgodba o odnosu med gorami in oblaki, tako nekak. Se pravi, zanima me to, kakšen je svet, ko damo človeka stran, ko nehamo razmišljati o tem, kaj se bo zgodilo v naslednjem trenutku, kaj je bilo za nami, ampak pomislimo na to, kako ene stvari obstajajo že neskončno, praktično dolgo in še bojo in probamo malo v tem svetu bivati noter, no. To je nekak ta film.
In še malo nam že primankuje časa, ne, tako da bi mogoče še tebe vprašal, kaj nas še čaka danes, jutri, kaj bi mogoče izpostavila od Videa na plaži?
Danes je program, ki se mu reče Onkraj poslušnosti in v bistvu vključuje filme, ki prikazujejo nek upor ali nekonvencionalno ravnanje protagonistov, tako da bo zelo tak punk program. Priporočam mogoče dokumentarec Line Rider, režiserja Simona Intiharja, ki v bistvu prikazuje življenje in delo ustvarjalca spretne igrice Line Rider, tako da to bo zelo zanimivo. Potem v naslednjih dneh pa imamo Onkraj izginjanja jutri, poudarek na neki eksistenci ali človekovi odsotnosti v svetu, v nedeljo pa Onkraj preživetja, to je pa v bistvu tematika neke bitke za obstoj. Tako da zelo razgiban program nas še čaka. če bi lahko še priporočila, mogoče bo na programu jutri observacijski dokumentarec Been There, švicarske režiserke Corine Schwingruber Ilić, ki v bistvu snema turiste na nekih turističnih destinacijah, ki fotografirajo in se gnetejo na kupu in zgledajo zelo bizarno, tako da tudi tega zelo priporočam. Ja, bo veliko zabaveno.
Vse ostalo pa boste pač mogli prijati sem in si pogledati, ne, preostanek programa. Tako da, Juš, Teja, hvala vama, da ste se nam pridružila zdajle. Bomo imeli en kratek glasbeni premor, potem pa Bill Morrison in Vanja Gajić.
This is the song at the end of the movie, when the house lights go on, the people go home, the plot's been resolved, it's all over. This is the day after the last sad goodbye that took so long. My true love is gone, he's left me alone, we're all over. I am the girl with her face in her hands, shaken. This is the letter he left on the stairwell that seemed so unreal, with words that could kill, I'll send you the bill when it's over. Song at the end of the movie, when the house lights go on and the people go home, the plot's been resolved, it's all over, all over.
Zdravo. Torej, kot napovedano, smo sedaj v etru z Billom Morrisonom. Bill je filmski ustvarjalec in umetnik iz Chicaga, ki živi in dela v New Yorku. Največ dela z analognimi arhivskimi posnetki, ki jih obdeluje in kombinira s sodobno originalno glasbo in tako ustvarja eksperimentalne found footage kratke filme. Jutri ob 18. bomo v Art kinu Odeon lahko gledali njegove filme Prstan in njen vijolični poljub iz leta 2021 in pa Incident. To je njegov lanski film in tudi najnovejši. V projekcijah bo potekal tudi masterclass z ustvarjalcem. Bill, welcome to Radio Student. Thanks for joining us. So this isn't your first time at Kino Otok. You were here in 2017 with the film Dawson City Frozen Time. How do you feel back in Isola?
Oh, it's nice to be back here. Beautiful town and beautiful festival.
Okay. So the film used in Dawson City, Frozen Time, was found footage in the literal sense. They found it under the permafrost of a decommissioned swimming pool, as I read. Yeah. Can you tell us more about how you found out about this footage and why you decided to use it?
Well, it's sort of a legend within the archival film circles. It's the Dawson City collection. In 1978, they were doing some construction on a parking lot in the town of Dawson City, which is in the Yukon province of Canada, way up north. And as they were moving the earth, they found some rolls of film, and they realized that they had stumbled upon a whole cache of films. And they stopped construction and called in film specialists who could examine what it was, and they realized that it was nitrate film and that it was most of it was 100 years old. So this happened, again, in the late 70s while I was still a schoolboy. I'd always thought it was a fascinating project or a fascinating story, and as I became a filmmaker, and really specifically a filmmaker interested in archival footage and telling the story of archival film collections, I thought this would be the perfect subject of a story that would be about that collection, but also about the story that the films told and the story of the town and indeed the story of cinema.
What's your process of finding the analog archival footage you use otherwise? Do you have like a standard approach?
I don't have a standard approach. There are archives that I return to and that I have really special access to. The Library of Congress has nitrate vaults, and for many years I was sort of a resident poet there, if you will. I would, I was able to come down and see what they were going to throw away, and I would save those reels, bring them to a laboratory, scan them, and make new films out of them. And I also have a one of my other favorite archives is the Fox Movietone outtakes that are in the Moving Image Research Center at the University of South Carolina. I would say those two collections comprise the bulk of the work that I made with nitrate film. But I am open to other projects, projects where I'm trying to tell a story with films and therefore looking for many different sources to help me tell that story, or specific collections that I either find or people send me or bring my attention to where I can try to develop a story about that collection or that is specific to that collection, which is a different type of filmmaking.
Two of the films we're watching tomorrow, Her Violet Kiss and The Ring, use footage from existing films.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, Pawns of Passion from... Yes, from 1928, and then The Loves of a Blonde, yeah. Milos Forman's film from 1965. Why did you decide to use these two films?
Again, this is they're films that had deteriorated or decayed in a certain way that I thought was interesting and changed them and changed the narrative element of them. Both of them were made by me in 2021, so they expressed some sort of feeling about the lockdown, about being, you know, the inability to go out. In the case of, they both tell the story of parties, actually, and therefore they're paired together here for that reason. But parties where there is a decay in the air, and which people are fleeing or is infecting them. And so it was sort of a playful commentary on the pandemic.
So as you said, the film, it looks like it's decaying. It also is decaying. There are like discoloration, some parts look torn or burnt through. Are these effects already there in total, or do you maybe get inspired by the decay that has already happened and then you build on it? How do you work with that?
This is all the way I found it, for the most part. I mean, I do slow it down so that each frame of decay becomes its own image rather than just a fluttering ephemeral thing that passes very quickly. It takes on the image of the frame, and therefore it also has a relationship between the moving image behind it or within it. But in most cases, I'm interested in how nature or the conditions have affected a film.
A very important part of these films, and I believe your films in general, is the music, the original music that's composed for them. For me, when watching these two films, it kind of felt like they were, the old archival footage was pulled into the present. Mm. That's what I got from it. Yeah. What's the desired effect of the music in your eyes?
Yeah, is to somehow make it more contemporary or to contextualize it. So that maybe you think about a contemporary issue like the pandemic. The music in both these two shorter films came about in different ways, though. They're both composed by friends of mine. In the case of Her Violet Kiss, Michael Montez had written it and offered it to me as something that maybe I'd be interested in making a film with. I had recently discovered that footage in my archive, something I had scanned maybe 10 years earlier, but had come upon for another project recently, and indeed I felt it worked well with Michael's music. And the other piece that came to it differently, I was commissioned to make a film for a film festival that year. I had also been sitting on this footage by Miloš Forman that had been burned by a projector and therefore had these dots wherever the dark emulsion happened in the center of the frame, which looked like a disease or some sort of virus that was being passed between characters. And I thought that it was both very beautiful and also kind of unnerving. I sort of randomly chose a track by Yola Tango that I thought worked, and we've been showing it with that track ever since.
Did you commission the music yourself in the sense that you kind of directed the composer in a specific direction for any of your films?
In some of my films, yeah. In Dawson City, Frozen Time, I worked in the what I would call the more traditional way of using cues, and with The Great Flood also with Bill Frisell, specific moments where we would use a certain type of music rather than another. And with the most recent feature, The Village Detective, working with David Lang, choosing the instrumentation and when the cues have happened. And, you know, that I think is, like I say, a more traditional way that a director works with a soundtrack composer. And you don't see a lot of times where the music exists first and the image comes later, which is another way that I work.
Okay, so usually that collaboration looks like that. Did you finish the film and it's silent and then you send it to the composer and they work off it?
There's what we call a scratch track, so you use something else or a temp track that hopefully they've written already so that it reminds them of music they've already done. Sometimes that can be difficult. Like I used a pre-recorded track from Bill Frisell once and he thought that it worked so well that he didn't want to write anything new. So he maybe choose something that doesn't work that well, you know.
Okay. So if we move on to Incident, your latest film, this is a documentary film about a shooting in Chicago, which took place in July 2018, in which a police officer murdered a black man, Harith Augustus. So this film is very different from what you usually do.
Right.
How did you approach the subject matter? Please answer first.
So it should be noted that a lot of the groundwork for this project had already been done by a journalist named Jamie Calvin. And in fact, he had produced 6 videos with forensic architecture out of London, sort of analyzing the moment of the murder from different prisms of time, different contextualizations. They created a series that was presented at the Chicago Architecture Biennial called 6 Durations of a Split Second, in which it was analyzed within the context of years, hours, years, days, hours, minutes, seconds, and milliseconds. It also involved 3D renderings of frames that we couldn't see. I was interested in more the aftermath, the incident where the murder takes place, and the way that the police covered it up, because they successfully murdered someone and were never charged. Nobody was ever charged criminally, and they also won a civil case against them. You know, I thought this was a miscarriage of justice, and that the footage clearly showed that the police were wrong. But that because Aretha Gustus was carrying a gun, and there was a frame that he might have been even reaching for his gun, there was a gray area where it was deemed that the police needed to make a split-second decision, and therefore they were within their rights to murder this guy. But of course, it was a situation that the police created to begin with. Gun laws, obscene as they are in the United States, do allow for people to own guns and to carry them on the street. And so it becomes a question of who gets to carry a gun. If a white man's carrying a gun, then he's not harassed. But if a black man's carrying a gun, then he is.
So the officers point out the presence of the body held cameras a few times in the film. They're worried about whether they should keep them on and what they can say or not. I guess this was because they knew the footage was going to be made public. Is this still the case?
Yeah, it's an interesting case. I mean, the film talks about an earlier police murder in 2014 with Laquan McDonald, in which dashboard camera footage was suppressed for 13 months. And when it was finally revealed, this journalist Jamie Calvin sued the police department to see it, it led to the indictment of the officer who did the shooting, and he was charged with six counts of first-degree murder. After that, there was a federal probe, and the city of Chicago was mandated to change their rules of accessibility of this footage, and it was deemed that after a police incident that involved violence, that all footage, all recordings must be made public within 60 days. The police, like I said, in a very savvy PR move, they isolated the frame where it seemed that Augustus was touching his gun, and they made that the lead story in the nightly news the very next night, and it essentially killed the case. That it took the air out of any public outrage. But the fact remains is that the footage does tell a different story. And we're seeing a very specific period of time where the police are now aware that they have to wear these cameras, and that the recording of their voice is going to can be and will be used against them, and so you see them in the act of creating a narrative and really justifying their actions and repeating the same lie over and over again until it becomes the official narrative. I would say that this was a specific moment when the police were somewhat naive or not used to working in this way, and had to remind each other that these live cameras were on, and that just recently in the past 6 months, the city of Chicago has voted against uploading this type of footage again. So it is a very unique situation where we gained access to an enormous amount of footage, and it's doubtful that another film with this kind of access will be made, at least in Chicago.
Okay. You use different types of footage, surveillance camera footage, and then the police body held cameras that we mentioned. So you said the police body held cameras, that footage was made public because of the case. What about all of the surveillance cameras from the street?
So there's, four different types of surveillance camera. There's the POD, which is what they call the police observation device, and that's the first establishing shot that you see, the wide shot that zooms in and out. So that is activated and then remotely controlled. There's the really the only HD footage that exists in the whole thing, which are the private closed circuit TV cameras that are owned by the shop owners and point east and west on both shops on that strip. Those become property of the police. And then there's the, as you said, the body worn cameras, which are the only ones that are contain microphones. And then there's the dashboard camera that we see has the best angle of the actual shooting taking place, and also becomes sort of the narrative in their getaway as when they run away. So there's four types of footage. They're all become property of the police, and they're all uploaded with, you know, as part of the incident. Yeah.
So, as you mentioned, the body-worn cameras are the only ones that record sound.
Yeah.
And as we talked before, most of your films rely quite heavily on the music. But here you chose a different approach. If I'm not mistaken, the only sound we hear is the one recorded by the body-worn cameras. What led you to this decision? Did you ever consider a different approach?
Well, no, I certainly didn't consider adding music to this story. You know, I became aware of how important silence was in this story, because it's very hard to make out what has happened in that first establishing shot from the POD. You see these, there seems to be a skirmish, but it's almost out of frame, and then somebody runs across the street and they lie down, and so you assume they're shot. But the first sound you hear is actually a lie. It says police shot, you know, and so you're in a, you know, at the mercy of an untrustworthy narrator, and you're trying to make out what happened. And so we tell the story first as those few seconds where the actual shooting happens, and then we go back and give two different contextualizations, one specific to that. Who was on the street there that day? Who are these officers? Who is Harith Augustus? And then also the context of Laquan McDonald, the earlier shooting, the laws that went in effect, and you know, specifically the laws to own a gun, to be licensed to have a gun, and to be licensed to carry a gun, all which are important information as we go forward and understand what happened. And when we come back to the officers' narration of the footage, they also become sort of unwitting microphones for the community. They're keeping the community out of the what they call the crime scene area, and they become conduits for a protest that's going on. And so the community becomes sort of a Greek chorus of people who actually saw what happened and are speaking truth to power.
You, throughout the film, you overlay different footage. How did you find the balance between doing this, so putting one shot under another one, paralleling different shots? I mean, I feel like that decision creates this atmosphere of confusion that was manufactured during the event, and was probably also actually there for yeah. everyone involved. I'm guessing you tried to recreate that for the audience, but then also leave in enough clarity so
yeah, I mean,
that it's still readable.
What happens is there's just a plethora of footage. There's a lot of different cameras, and what we were able to do is sync them all together. So just because I know not everyone has seen this film, it's not as much a question of overlaying, but showing either a full-frame shot, a split-screen shot, or different quadrants. But they're all synced in time with each other, and then the running time the time of day is seen in the upper left-hand corner. So we went through all the footage and we synced it together. Usually the time code didn't correspond, so it was a matter of finding you know, common audio elements, usually that were provided by the police radio. And yeah, just through playing with the footage that way, getting the different points of view, I think it began with the idea that I wanted the corpse of the victim to be visible at all times or at most times, so you could see the indifference that the police had and that he was presented a problem that was creating a situation for them that they had to clean up, quote unquote. And that's how he was regarded. Nobody went to check to see if he still had a pulse or if he could be administered care. He immediately became this focal point for attracting a crowd that they had to remove. And so that was the first decision. And then I realized that there was a lot of different points of view that could be incorporated, both from different officers' point of view, but then also, like I mentioned, community members' point of view, and that they could be organized within a continuous timeline. In playing with that, I realized that, yes, as you noted, it creates a great sense of confusion and anxiety, and that was palpable and it made the storytelling better. You know?
So the footage used here is digital, and you mostly work with analog film. You mentioned that you scan it. I don't know, does that mean that you work with it in the digital scanned format anyway?
Yeah.
How did the two formats affect your process?
Well, again, this is a very different type of project for me, and it's using more contemporary or footage. But I would say also the difference is that with most film work that I've done, I actually have access to the original film itself, and whether I scan it or a lab scans it. It used to be that I worked film on film and I would cut on film, but I haven't done that probably in close to 20 years. I work with a scanned image and edit it digitally. So in the way that I edit it, there's no difference in my workflow, but the difference is that with film, it usually was a physical or material vessel for the image that I found or had access to. And in this case, with this video footage, there was never a vessel. It went from the camera onto somebody's server and was uploaded, and then I downloaded it. And so it lived always in sort of a liminal, ephemeral state. And I think that's part of the message here, is that this footage belongs to everyone.
So are you already working on a future project? Do you plan on returning back to, I guess you're more standard topics or explorations, or maybe continuing in this more political route?
Well, I do feel like I made a number of political films before this one. I would say the Dawson City Frozen Time, in fact, with a political film, the Miner's Hymns, Great Flood. And there's ways of reflecting contemporary issues through past footage. I don't think of each project as part of a career arc. Maybe I should. But I sort of come upon things that interest me, and I try to explore them. And last count, I'm working on a piece about a Tibetan monk who walked out of Tibet in 1959, and I'm collecting footage that would support that story. I'm working with footage that I shot myself 30 years ago when I was a dishwasher in the Village Vanguard. I'm bringing that, I'm slowly bringing that along to something that could be presented as a new piece. And there's other archival collections that I'm interested in exploring. Some have decay and some don't. And I'm grateful that people send me ideas and things when they think of me. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for watching the work and for your great questions.
No problem. So I'm going to switch back to Slovene now. Film je bila Morrisona, lahko še enkrat ponavljamo, ujamete v Izoli jutri ob 18. zvečer.
Tako, prišli smo do konca še drugega javljanja iz Kina Otok, iz kavarne Odeon, ki se ji še enkrat najlepše zahvaljujemo, da nas je gostila. Javljanje smo pripravili Vanja Gajič, Lucija Klauš, Marko Miočič in Vid Bešter, tehnicirala je Lora. Želimo vam lep večer in če niste v Izoli, poslušajte Radio Študent še naprej. Wish I could rewind and reverse time.
se ne dogaja, nobenih eventov, nobenih jobov ni, tema skratka, to je to.
Poslušali ste Kulturni obzornik.